In our study tonight, we're continuing to talk about the reign of King Solomon. 1 Kings chapter 3. In 1 Kings chapter 2, we talked about the admonition of David to Solomon to show thyself a man. We talked about the setting in order of the kingdom of Solomon as he is instructed by David to be sure and take care of Abner and Amasa. And we have also talked about the efforts of King Solomon relative to Abiathar to set the kingdom in order. In our study tonight, I simply want to look at chapter 3 as we begin this text, noting the time frame when Solomon became king, and notice the responsibilities that he had to keep the commandments of God as his father David charged him in 1 Kings chapter 2 and in verse 3. We note that in the reign of Solomon, the temple was to be built. Provisions had been made by his father David. Much gold and silver and timber and so forth, supplies had been stored up for Solomon to accomplish this task. And we've noted in the third chapter in times gone by, in fact we introduced the third chapter last time by noting that Solomon had made an affinity with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her into the city of David. We noted that that's a very popular custom during the time to cement relationships between various nations, to give one's son or daughter, or to take one's son or daughter in a marriage relationship, and that's what he does here. Contrary, of course, to the commandment of God relative to kings in Deuteronomy chapter 17. I hope you have that noted somewhere, because we keep coming back to that frequently. But in our study tonight, in verse 4, it tells us that the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there. For that was the great high place. 1,000 burnt offerings did Solomon offer upon that altar. In Gibeon, Jehovah appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God asked, or said, "Ask what I shall give thee." We're studying in 1 Kings chapter 3 regarding the reign of King Solomon and how that God said to King Solomon, "Ask what you will." I don't think so. No, he supplied the offerings. Because we see that the priesthood has been established and restored to the lineage of Eleazar. Right. Yeah. No, I don't think so. Not that he served in the capacity of priest, but that he did offer these like the people did when they offered sacrifices of atonement. But it was sacrificed by the priest, is my understanding of it. But in that setting, it tells us that God asked him, "Ask what I shall give thee." And look at what Solomon said in verse 6. Solomon said, "Thou hast showed unto thy servant David, my father, great loving kindness, according as he walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great loving kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. And now, O Jehovah my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or come in. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give thy servant, therefore, an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and evil, for who is able to judge this thy great people?" What a request that King Solomon has made. Now, one of the things that we have noted and we'll discuss in just a little bit when we get down to verse 14 has to do with the age of Solomon. There is some speculation about the age that Solomon was when he became king, but what we do know is he was very young. Some have suggested, in fact, Josephus, the Jewish historian, says that Solomon was 12 years old when he became king. How much credibility you want to give to that is up to you. But if we assume that Solomon was very young, maybe older than 12, if we assume that he was, say, 20, we know that he reigned for 40 years. How old would that make him at his death? 60 years old. So Solomon died relatively young. And that's, of course, in conjunction with what you see in verse 14, as a condition was given upon which he would receive or be blessed with a long life. Now, hold that thought. Let's go back to what he asked for. It indicates when he asked for understanding to govern this people, that that would be fitting for a young man. He himself said, I am but a child. I'm a young man, a youth, as it were. I don't know how to go out or go in. Now, we might say, well, he's just using that expression to describe his lack of understanding, or an expression to describe his humility to exercise the task of being king of these people. But there may be some literal sense in which he is identifying himself as a child. He's a young man and has come to this place in life very young to serve as a king over these people. So we note that there is somewhat inherent within Solomon a certain element of wisdom to recognize his lack of ability to govern this great people and to ask of God, give me an understanding heart that I can do this. Yes. I don't know. I don't think that that is revealed to us. I don't know. Typically, you know, if we think that Solomon was 60 years old when he died, you might think then, well, he surely had some wives that outlived him. That's likely. But I don't know of any evidence that would really answer your question. Okay? So beyond that, I can't go. But we know that in verse 10, what Solomon asked for, chapter 3, verse 10, pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto him, because thou hast asked this thing, and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern justice. Behold, I have done according to thy word. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there hath been none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I also have given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days, and if thou walk or wilt walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days. Now let's pause here and notice what Solomon asked for and then what God granted. He asked for an understanding heart. God gave him that. But because he had not asked for the typical things that you might think of, God gave him those things too. Now, this one element was conditioned, a long life, conditioned upon you keeping my statutes and my commandments, walking in my ways as your father David did. Now turn back, if you will, to the second chapter and notice the admonition of David to Solomon there, beginning in verse 2. He said, I am going the way of all the earth. Be thou strong, therefore, and show thyself a man, and keep the charge of Jehovah thy God, to walk in his ways and to keep his statutes and his commandments and his ordinances and his testimonies, according to that which is written in the law of Moses, that thou mayest prosper in all that thou doest, and whithersoever thou turnest thyself. David said, and of all people, who better qualified? David said, if you do what God says, he'll bless you. Now, hasn't that been the standard rule from the beginning when Moses led them up out of the land of Egypt? If you do what God says, He'll bless you. And if you don't, He'll curse you. And He told them that long before they ever came into the land. Now, we've rehearsed the passages and we'll continue to do so. We'll not do it tonight, but we'll continue to do so because I want you to be aware of them and not forget where those admonitions are located. But you can add this one to that. 1 Kings chapter 2, where David told Solomon that very thing. Now, if you keep my commandments, I'll give you long days. Well, we look at Solomon's life and we say at best, round 60. What's that indicative of? He didn't do what God said. Now, we see that and we're going to see that, especially by the time we turn a page or two and get over to the 11th chapter. But in this chapter, we see that one condition imposed in order for him to have long days. Now, in the third chapter, we see Solomon's wise judgments, or an illustration of Solomon's wise judgments. Somebody tell me the story of the two women, the two harlots. What happened? John? Okay. All right. The one that did not want the child harmed. This is the mom. And, of course, we see them all standing in awe and amazement at the great wisdom that God had instilled within Solomon, as you'll note in verse 28, to do him justice. And, of course, that illustrates that God did what He said that He would do. He blessed him with a measure of wisdom that was greater than anybody else. Now, we don't see Solomon's wisdom just simply in that illustration. We see it in several realms. Yes, Bruce? Well, he wanted him to behave. How was it worded? Back over in the... pardon me? Yeah, it was before that, I believe, when... yeah, being worthy. Yeah, if you prove yourself worthy, I believe is how it's worded. But the idea is very similar. Okay, I'm not finding the verse. It's in the first chapter there, I believe, somewhere, but I'm not seeing it. But yes, that's the idea. Oh, pardon me? Yes, okay. So, but we know that Solomon didn't always do that, and he transgressed, and he suffered the consequences, as we're going to be reading about. Now, when you get into the fourth chapter, we see Solomon's officers that he set in place, and I'm not going to attempt to read all of the names and mispronounce most of them, but what I do want to call to your attention is in the fourth chapter in verse 21. It tells us that Solomon ruled over all the kingdoms from the river unto the land of the Philistines and unto the border of Egypt. They brought tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life. Now, we've talked about the extent of King David's rule. And what was the extent of the rule of King David? All right, from Dan to Beersheba. We know that David ruled from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. We noted in our study back in the 2 Samuel, I'm trying to recall the passage, where he recovered his dominion at the river, it says. I can find that readily right here. The reason I want us to remember that is in connection with Genesis chapter 15, verse 18. That would be in 1 Kings chapter 4. 2 Samuel chapter 8, verse 3. 2 Samuel chapter 8, verse 3, where David recovered his dominion at the river, indicating that a portion of this land had been lost, and now David rules over all of it. What we see now is that Solomon also rules over all of it, from the river Euphrates, down to the border of Egypt. You see that in verse 21 of 1 Kings chapter 4. But dropping down in that text, you've got it nailed in verse 25 there, Lynn, from Dan even to Beersheba, all the days of Solomon. And the wealth of Solomon we'll talk about at verse 26. But if you'll drop down to verse 29 of chapter 4, it says that God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt, for he was wiser than all men. And then he's, of course, compared to some. In verse 32, he spake 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. And as he spake of trees, from the cedar that is in Lebanon, even unto the hyssop that springeth out of the wall. He spake also of beasts, and of birds, and of creeping things, and of fishes. And there came of all peoples to hear the wisdom of Solomon from all kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. Now, perhaps you've had an opportunity in times gone by to talk with someone, and you said, well, that person is just well-versed in a lot of different areas. Sometimes I stand in amazement with how much detailed information one fella seems to have about such a wide variety of subjects. And I don't. But we note that Solomon did. He had in-depth wisdom from A to Z on a variety of subjects. And to the extent that folks were impressed with what he could talk about and the depth with which he could discuss those things. And they would come from various places to see that. Now, Hiram, chapter 5, in verse 1 beginning, chapter 5, verse 1, tells us that he was king of Tyre, and he sent his servants unto Solomon, for he had heard that they had anointed him king in the room of his father, for Hiram was a lover of David. And Solomon sent to Hiram, saying, thou knowest how that David, my father, could not build a house for the name of Jehovah his God, for the wars which were about him on every side, until Jehovah put them under the soles of his feet. But now Jehovah my God hath given me rest on every side. There is neither adversary nor evil occurrence. In other words, what we're seeing is that Solomon is to build the house of God. Now we note here in verse 5, I think a reference to 2 Samuel chapter 7, when it indicates, thy son whom I will set upon thy throne in thy room, he shall build a house for my name. Yes, Solomon would build the house of God. He would build the temple in the city of Jerusalem. That's what David wanted to do, but David could not do it. But Solomon, his son, would. Now, following that theme, notice, if you will, what was one of Hiram's jobs. What was he to provide? Lumber. Right. Now, remember that Hiram was the king of what? King of Tyre. When we think of the king of Tyre, what was Tyre? Province or a city? Phoenician city, that's right. Right. It indicates that Hiram had the laborers to be able to go up into the mountains of Lebanon and to harvest these huge cedar trees. Now, we're going to talk about those as we pursue just a little bit. Timbers of cedar and timber of fir according to all his desire, verse 11 tells us. So we find that Solomon and Hiram strike a deal for Hiram's participation in the building of the temple. What was Hiram to receive out of the deal? Cities, yes, that was later, but initially here, what has Solomon agreed to? All kinds of food. That's right. In verse 11, Solomon gave Hiram 20,000 measures of wheat, for food to his household and 20 measures of pure oil, thus gave Solomon to Hiram year by year. Now these cities, we'll talk about those in a bit, because Hiram evidently didn't like that, didn't want them, and so that presented a scenario. But nonetheless, we find that, Hiram's participation was in supplying the timber for the building of the temple. Now, look at this map, if you would, for just a moment. Here are the mountains of Lebanon where the timbers were to come from. Here's Jerusalem down here on the top of the mountain where the temple is to be built. Now, in our geography class so far, we've noted that this constitutes the hill country of Israel. So you've got mountain range all the way from top to bottom. If you cut these timbers up here, how are you going to get them down here? Water, all right? Water. Now remember, a lot of time has passed since Israel came out of Egypt, and a lot of time is going to pass before the coming of Christ, but we've got these timbers, and you said water, that's right. They come from here by way of the sea, down here to Joppa, where they are dismantled from rafts or barges, and then they are transported up the mountain to the city of Jerusalem, hold that still, which is right there. Okay? We want to note that. And that became quite a remarkable project that no doubt we think that our modern methods of transporting trumps anything that could ever be done in history, and that's just foolishness. If you look at 1 Kings chapter 5 and verse 9, 1 Kings chapter 5 verse 9, Hiram said, "My servants shall bring them down from Lebanon to the sea, and I will make them into rafts to go by sea to the place that thou shalt appoint me, and I will cause them to be broken up there, and thou shalt receive them, and thou shalt accomplish my desire in giving food for my household." So going to bring them down by way of the sea, from the mountains of Lebanon to the mountaintop place of Jerusalem. Now, when we see that and have discussed the length of the land of Israel, about what would you suppose the distance would be a long way of the sea here? Just venture a guess. All right, 150 miles about so from here to here, so what would this then be? Be thereabouts, about 75 miles, perhaps? Okay, well, it may not be the scale of miles on this. It might not necessarily be to scale. Well, yeah, what, from here to here is what you're saying? Okay. Yeah. Where's Dan? Right here. From Dan to Beersheba. Okay, well, from here to about the Dead Sea is about 75 miles. So this might be a little bit longer than 75, right down the seacoast. But at any rate, that would be quite a feat to bring logs that far by way of the sea, considering you've got to bring them down the mountain to the sea, and then from the sea up the mountain to the city of Jerusalem. Pardon me? Yeah. Yeah, that's correct.
They get along with those.
Yeah, that's correct.
Whereas the Israelites didn't much care for water.
They knew how to do this.
Yeah.
And no doubt a part of the reason why they're employed to do it. Hire somebody that knows what they're doing, indeed. Well, another note that I want to make just here is just how many men are working on this project. Solomon had provided 30,000 of his people to go up to Lebanon and work on this, 10,000 at a time, rotating every month. Now, if you can imagine being in that kind of a workforce, 10,000 people, Israelites, being provided in the mountains of Lebanon to accomplish this tremendous task. And then when you consider further, his workforce, add to that 30,000 the 70,000 who were described as burden bearers, 80,000 who were hewers in the mountains, and then 3,300 who became overseers of this workforce. And then consider as well those who were still living in the land that had made covenants with the people of God, again contrary to the plan of God, but they had made covenants with the people of God, and now they have been made slaves to work in these type projects. Now, when you look at numbers like that, there's obviously a question that surfaces. How do you feed so many people? Okay? Well, kind of like eating an elephant, one bite at a time. Well, there was a plan to do this. Look, if you will, at 1 Kings chapter 4, once again. 1 Kings chapter 4. We've noted in these verses that they, the first few verses, that indeed they are to be fed, and we see the numbers there beginning in verse 13. But if you'll drop down into the text, I don't know why I have verses 22 through 23 and so forth. That's not the right chapter. I didn't put the chapter on that. Now that's confused me. Oh, chapter 4. I'm looking in the wrong chapter. I'm sorry. I'm looking at chapter 5. Yes, verses 27 is the passage that I want to look at. Barley, verse 27. And those officers provided victuals for King Solomon, and all that came into King Solomon's table, every man in his month, they let nothing be lacking. Barley also and straw for the horses, and swift steeds brought they unto the place where the officers were, every man according to his charge. Now, when you look at all of the things that were involved in this, backing up even to verse 21 and so forth and following, what was it that Samuel told the people in 1 Samuel chapter 8 when they first approached him about having a king? All right, that's right. Now, when you populate the army like this, and you have to feed them, you have to have somebody that feeds them. And then you have to have the produce and the livestock to feed them. Where's that going to come from? All right, you're going to provide that, you see. So when we consider this many workmen, add that up for me, Richard, how many people we have here? That's a whole lot of people to feed. And that's going to require quite a force behind them to keep them all equipped for what they need to do the work that Solomon is doing. And that's exactly what Samuel told them would happen with this arrangement of having a king. Now, the fact that it's Solomon doesn't change the picture any. That's what it means to have a king. You have to grease the wheels that turn, and that's going to come from you. They were happy at this point, and they were happy up to the point when the temple was built. But then we've got the building of the house of Solomon. And then we've got other projects that Solomon built. He reinforced the walls around the city. There were cities within the land that he strengthened and established. And so these building projects just keep on going and going and going and going. And where do the forces come from? Had to come from the people. When you consider that Solomon was king for 40 years, you know, you've got a generation involved in a workforce that very likely needs to be replaced by another generation, and then the beginnings of another generation to be able to carry out this kind of work during the 40-year reign of Solomon. And the people soon grow weary of that kind of thing. And we see evidence of that here in just a little bit. But that's exactly how Samuel described the nature of having a king to rule over you. That's what that means. Now, here in the building of the temple, you've got 7 years involved in this project. You'll read about that in 1 Kings chapter 6. In fact, you'll read some very infinite details about the building of the temple. One of the things that I find remarkable just in reading about this, beginning at verse 7, for example, it says, "And the house, when it was in building, was built of stone made ready at the quarry, and there was neither hammer nor axe nor any tool of iron heard in the house while it was in building. David, you ever been around a construction very much? I thought so. When you see construction after it's finished, any of you ever tried to do any finish work on a house that somebody else has quickly built? Yeah, try to find a straight line. Find something that's plumb or square. You see, that presents a real problem. How nice it would be to pick up the pieces of wood or the stones in this case, and everything fits exactly perfect. It's exactly perfect. You don't have to remeasure, resaw, trim, tie it up, cinch it up. It fits so that there's not even the noise of a hammer. Now that tells you the skill of these craftsmen who were responsible for the building of the temple. You'll notice further in verse 14 that Solomon built the house and finished it. In verse 22 it says, "And the whole house was overlaid with gold, and all the house was finished. Also the whole altar that belonged to the oracle he overlaid with gold." In verse 28, as it discusses the cherubim, it tells us that this also was overlaid with gold. And in verse 29 and 30, as he describes the floor of the house, it too was overlaid within and without with gold. And so you see some mighty expensive materials. Okay.
And the house, when it was in building, was built of stone and ready before it was brought there, so that it was neither hammer nor axe nor tool of iron heard in the house while it was building. And that means even probably when the inlaid gold.
Well, I don't know about that. Well, that was a movable piece of furniture for the temple, that's true. But when we think about these stones, I've not spent much time at all working with stones, but I know that it can be very intricate work. And to think of building a building, and you've got all these stones in the size of this temple, all fitted together. Not necessary to trim anything, to even bump it into place. It just fits. Just set it in place. That is right. That is right. Look back, if you will, into 2 Samuel chapter David delivered the pattern for the temple unto Solomon. It stated two or three times that he gave the pattern. Well, now, I've got to find that. Is it in the Chronicles account? Thank you. 1 Chronicles chapter 11. Oh, 28 verse 11. 1 Chronicles 28. Yes, thank you. Verse 11. It says, "Then David gave to Solomon his son the pattern of the porch of the temple and of the houses thereof and of the treasuries thereof, and of the upper rooms thereof, and of the inner chambers thereof, and the mercy, and the place of the mercy seat, and the pattern of all that he had by the Spirit. Look at that. Where did David get the pattern? In verse 19, all this, said David, have I been made to understand in writing from the hand of Jehovah, even all the works of this pattern. That's what I was looking for. Thank you. We know that the pattern of the temple David gave to Solomon, but where did David get it? Are we surprised it fit? Okay. That's right. It came from God. And so what we learn from this then is that we would expect it to fit. It is. Oh, yes. No. No, we're talking about something rather large. That's right. So when you consider the elements, the materials that were in it, the silver, the gold, the brass, the cedar, the marble, the iron, etc., etc., then we've got something that you just really can't put a price tag on. And they were to be blessed if they would keep the Word of God. Now, this brings me to the text of 1 Kings chapter 9, where we want to make another mental note of a warning that God gave. 1 Kings chapter 9. In 1 Kings chapter 9, beginning in verse 7. 1 Kings 9, verse 7. Well, let me begin at verse 1, I think, to get the thought that I want to present. It says, it came to pass when Solomon had finished the building of the house of Jehovah and the king's house and all Solomon's desire, which he was pleased to do, that Jehovah appeared to Solomon the second time. Now, when was the first time? That's right. That's right. Now, verse 3, and Jehovah said unto him, I have heard thy prayer and thy supplication that thou hast made before me. I have hallowed this house which thou hast built to put my name there forever, and mine eyes and my heart shall be there perpetually. And as for thee, if thou wilt walk before me as David thy father walked, in integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do according to all that I have commanded thee, and wilt keep my statutes and mine ordinances, then I will establish the throne of thy kingdom over Israel forever, according as I promised to David thy father, saying, there shall not fail thee a man upon the throne of Israel. But if ye turn away from following me, ye or your children, and not keep my commandments and my statutes, which I have set before you, but shall go and serve other gods and worship them, then will I cut off Israel out of the land which I have given them, and this house which I have hallowed for my name will I cast out of my sight, and Israel shall be a proverb and a byword among all peoples. And though this house is so high, yet shall every one that passeth by it be astonished, and shall hiss, and they shall say, why hath Jehovah done thus unto this land and to this house? And they shall answer, because they forsook Jehovah their God, who brought forth their fathers out of the land of Egypt, and laid hold on other gods, and worshipped them, and served them. Therefore hath Jehovah brought all this evil upon them. Does that sound familiar at all? Who told them that initially? Moses did. Where did he tell them that? Not long after they came out of Egypt, in Deuteronomy chapter 4. Who else has reminded them that of that? Moses did in Deuteronomy chapter 8, Deuteronomy 28. Joshua did in Joshua chapter 23, beginning in verse 14 through 16. So this has been repeated over and over and over and over and over and over. And it makes you scratch your head and wonder, well, why didn't they get the point? Well, let's scratch our head and wonder and raise the question, why don't we? Is that not a legitimate question too? You see, sin gets in the way there somewhere, and we make choices that we don't want God anymore. We're not interested in following Him. Even after all the great things that He has done and demonstrated His power, we are not impressed many times. Now this illustrates, once again, the map of the land that Solomon ruled over from the Euphrates to the river of Egypt. And again, I want you to keep in mind the borders of the land. as it was described to Abraham way back when, where Genesis 15:18 beginning is the passage that I want you to remember. Genesis 15:18, and of course the extent of the land, that which God had identified. Now, we talked about David, other projects that Solomon had. Not just the building of the house of God, but the building of his own house. Yes. Sure. Well, David was laying up materials, for one thing. It would be difficult to know what to lay up in terms of materials if you didn't know what the pattern called for, what the blueprint was. Well, likely, yes. When you start thinking about gathering up this much gold... Yeah, okay. How many trips to Lowe's does it take? Yeah. Yeah. David, for I don't know how long, but for some time, obviously, was collecting materials. And, of course, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, we've got materials that we're going to have for these, too. The building of Solomon's house, it was quite an elaborate structure. As you see, it took longer to build it than it did the temple. Yes. Yes, he finished the work on the temple and then started on his own house. That was the next major project. Yeah. And that's just some of his projects. Okay, Richard? They were, and of course we've set forth in a previous study, I forget if it was Sunday or last Wednesday, how that was it David that gave all these things, and that served then to stimulate the people to give as well. So they had lots of resources as a result of what David did and what the people did, and then of course now what Solomon is providing. Yes. Well, things would seem good so far, right? In 1 Kings chapter 8, it tells us that the people seem to be pleased. Things are going well. At the end of the chapter, verse 65 says, "So Solomon held the feast at the time, and all Israel with him, a great assembly, from the entrance of Hamath unto the brook of Egypt, before Jehovah our God, 7 days, and 7 days even 14 days. And on the 8th day he sent the people away, and they blessed the king and went into their tents joyful and glad of heart for all the goodness that Jehovah had showed unto David his servant and to Israel his people." At this point, things are great. We've got this accomplished and things are looking good. And God tells then, of course, Solomon in this second appearance, chapter 9, that if you do what I say, then things will continue to be good. In verse 10 of chapter 9, we learn, Donna, here's the passage perhaps you were referencing. It says, "It came to pass at the end of 20 years, wherein Solomon had built the two houses, the house of Jehovah and the king's house. Now Hiram, king of Tyre, had furnished Solomon with cedar trees and fir trees and with gold, according to all his desire. And then King Solomon gave Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. And Hiram came out from Tyre to see the cities which Solomon had given him, and they pleased him not. And he said, 'What cities are these which thou hast given me, my brother?' And he called them the land of Kabul unto this day." And of course that's noted or defined as displeasing. "And Hiram sent to the king 60 talents of gold." I don't like these cities. He didn't think much of them. He was not impressed. And so another project that we know that King Solomon engaged in verse 15 was to build the walls of Jerusalem and to build fortress towers from which the city could be defended. And look at here, this warning. I want to underscore that again in our thinking. 1 Kings chapter 9, verses 1 through 9. You do what I say, I'll bless you. You don't, no matter how elaborate this structure is, I'm going to destroy it. Even though you understand that it's the house of God, I'm going to destroy it. So that when the enemies come by, they'll marvel at it and raise the question, why has God done this to this land and to this people? Why did He allow the destruction of His own house? Now, we know that the time frame that we're talking about here is in the neighborhood of 1,000 years B.C. How much time passed before the Lord's house was destroyed? About, pardon me? Well, ultimately, yes, but let's back up a little bit. The first time that it was destroyed. We're considering now, after the Assyrian captivity of the northern kingdom, the southern kingdom still stood. We've got then the destruction of the southern kingdom as Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, destroyed the city of Jerusalem, destroyed the temple. And about when was that? About 586, the temple was destroyed. And we can read about that, how that it was indeed a byword, or the people would pass by astonished and hiss at the destruction of the city of Jerusalem at the hand of King Nebuchadnezzar.
It's almost impossible for me to grasp. The length of time that we talk about here, I mean, it seems like it's not much, but it's 400 years.
Yeah.
400 years, like almost twice as long as the United States has been around.
That's right.
Well,
let's just stretch your mind a little further. When we go back to the time of Moses, now, the giving of the law, about when are we talking about? Thereabouts. Yeah. Now you're back into those days, now you bring it up to these days. How much time has passed from the time when Moses said, when God brings you into the land and you start to worship idols, He's going to destroy you out of this land? You see, what I want us to be impressed with is time didn't change what God said. Now, we're reminded of that, are we not, in the New Testament? In 2 Peter chapter 3, where the writer says that a day is with the Lord as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as a day. He said, but the day of the Lord will come. Just because time has passed doesn't mean that what God promised won't happen. Okay? Now, we see that historically true in the history of Israel. We need to be impressed with that. All right. Solomon had many other building projects. We'll have to talk about those at another time.